Chapter 8. Mark leans his head back against the seat of the subtrans as it speeds along. He closes his eyes, smiles. School was a load that day, but it was over. Over for 2 weeks. Now he can relax and chill, just veg. Play the vert box and eat outrageous amounts of food. Hang out with Trina. Talk to Trina. Bug Trina. Maybe he'd just say adios to his parents and kidnap her, run away. There you go. He opens his eyes. She's sitting across from him, completely ignoring him. She has no idea that he's daydreaming about her, or even that he's mad for her. They've been friends for a long time, by circumstance more than anything. When you live next door to a kid, that kid is your buddy by the rules of the universe. Male, female, alien, doesn't matter. But how could he have known she'd turn into this beautiful thing with the hot body and the dazzling eyes? Of course, the only problem with that is that every other dude in the school likes her too. And Trina likes being liked. That is obvious. "Hey," he says. The subtrans bullets through the tunnels beneath New York City, whisper quiet, its movement almost soothing. It makes him want to close his eyes again. "What are you thinking about over there?" Her eyes meet his, then her face brightens into a smile.
"Absolutely nothing. That's what I'm going to do for 2 weeks. Not think. If I start to think, I'm going to think really hard about not thinking until I quit thinking."
"Wow. That almost sounds hard."
"No, just fun. Only brilliant prodigies know how to do it."
This is one of those moments where Mark has the ridiculous urge to say something about liking her, ask her out on an official date, reach out and take her hand. Instead, the usual dumb words come tumbling out.
"Oh, wisest of the wise, maybe you can teach me this method of thinking to not think."
Her face scrunches up a little.
"You are such a dork."
"Oh, yeah." He has her wrapped around his finger for sure. He feels like groaning, maybe punching himself in the face.
"But I like dorks," she says to soften the blow.
And he feels good again.
"So, what are your plans? You guys going anywhere? Staying home? What?"
"We might go to my granny's for a few days, but we'll be home most of the break. I'm supposed to go out with Danny sometime, but nothing solid. You?"
He's been knocked down a few notches. So much up and down with this girl.
Yeah. I mean, no, we're just... nothing. I'll be sitting around eating chips. Lots of burping, lots of watching my little sister get spoiled with presents."
Madison. Yeah, she's spoiled, but half of that is Mark's fault.
"Maybe we can hang out then."
And back up the scale he goes.
"That'd be awesome. How about every day?"
It's the boldest statement he's ever made to her.
"Okay. Maybe we can even..."
She looks around with exaggerated caution, then focuses back on him.
"Sneak a kiss in your basement."
For one long second, he thinks she's serious and his heart stops completely, goosebumps rising like soldiers across his skin. A flush of feeling burns in his chest. But then she starts laughing like a crazy person. Not really maliciously, and maybe he even notes a hint of real flirtation in there somewhere. But mostly he can tell that she sees them as lifelong buds, nothing more. That the thought of kissing in his basement is just plain silly. Mark officially decides to abandon his own notions for a while.
"You are so hilarious," he says. "I'm laughing on the inside."
She stops her giggling and uses her hand to fan her face.
"I really would, you know."
The last word has barely come out of her mouth when the lights go out. The subtrans loses all power and begins to slow. Mark almost falls out of his seat and into Trina's lap. Any other time, and maybe that would be a good thing, but now he just feels scared. He's heard stories about this sort of thing happening in the olden days, but in his lifetime, the power underground never fails. They are in absolute, complete darkness. People are beginning to scream. The brain isn't wired to be plunged into such darkness without warning. It's just scary. Finally, the glow from a few wrist phones breaks it a little. Trina grabs his hand and squeezes. "What in the world?" she asks simply. He feels reassured because she doesn't seem all that scared, really, and it brings him back to his senses. Even though it's never happened before, surely the subtrans is bound to break down eventually.
"Malfunction, I guess."
He pulls out his palm phone. He's not rich enough for one of those fancy wrist things, but strangely, there's no service. He puts it back in his pocket. Soft yellow emergency lights come on, strips that run down the roof of the train. They're dim, but still a welcome relief after the blindness of before. People are standing up all around him, looking up and down the train, whispering furiously to each other. Whispering seems like what you're supposed to do in such a situation.
"At least we're not in a hurry," Trina says.
In a whisper, of course. Mark has lost that initial sense of panic. Now all he wants to do is ask her what she meant when she said, "I really would, you know." But that moment has been shot down and killed for good. Of all the rotten timing. The train shakes, just a little. Trembling more than anything, like a heavy vibration. But it's unsettling and people scream again, move about. Mark and Trina exchange a look full of curiosity with a spark of fear. Two men stomp over to the exit doors, working to force them apart. They finally slide open and the men jump out onto the walkway that runs the length of the tunnel. Like a bunch of rats fleeing a fire, the rest of the passengers follow them, pushing and shoving and cursing until everyone is out. In a matter of 2 or 3 minutes, Mark and Trina are left alone on the subtrans car, the pale lights glowing above them.
"Not sure that's really what we should do,"
Trina says, for some reason still whispering.
"I'm sure this thing will flip back on soon."
"Yeah," Mark says.
The train continues to quake slightly, and that's beginning to worry him more.
"I don't know. Something seems really wrong, actually."
"You think we should go?"
He thinks about it for a second.
"Yeah. If we just sit here, I might go crazy."
"Okay, maybe you're right."
Mark stands up, as does Trina. They walk to the open doors, then climb out onto the walkway. It's narrow and has no railing, which makes it seem really dangerous if the trains start again. Emergency lights have come on in the tunnel as well, but they barely do anything to break the almost tangible darkness of a place so far underground.
"They went that way,"
Trina says, pointing to their left, and something in her tone makes Mark think she means they should go in the opposite direction. He agrees with her.
"So, to the right then," he says, giving a nod.
"Yeah, I don't want to be near any of those people. Can't even say why.
Seemed like a mob."
"Come on."
She pulls him by his arm as she begins walking down the narrow ledge. They both run a hand along the wall, almost leaning into it to make sure they don't topple onto the tracks. The wall is vibrating, but not as strongly as the train. Maybe whatever caused the power outage has finally begun to calm. Maybe it was just a simple earthquake and everything will be okay. They've been walking for 10 minutes, not saying a word to each other, when they hear the screams up ahead.
No, not just screams. Something beyond screams. Pure terror, like people being slaughtered.
Trina stops, turns to look back at Mark. Any doubts, or hopes rather, vanish. Something horrible has happened. Mark's instinct is to turn and run in the opposite direction, but he's ashamed of himself when Trina opens her mouth and shows how brave she is.
"We need to get up there, see what's going on, see if we can help."
How can he say no to that? They run, as carefully and as quickly as they can, until they reach the wide platform of a substation, and then they stop. The scene before them is too horrific for Mark's mind to compute. But he knows that nothing in his life will ever, ever be the same. Bodies litter the floor, naked and burned. Screams and cries of pain pierce his eardrums and echo off the walls. People are limping about, arms outstretched, their clothes on fire and their faces half melted like wax. Blood everywhere. and an impossible surge of heat washes through the air, like they're inside an oven. Trina turns, grabs his hand, a look of terror on her face that he thinks may be seared into his mind forever. She pulls him once again, running back to where they came from. All the while, he thinks of his parents, his little sister. In his mind, he sees them burning somewhere. He sees Madison screaming. And his heart breaks. Chapter 9.
Mark!
The vision was gone, but the memory of the tunnel still darkened his mind like some kind of seeping sludge.
Mark! Wake up!
That was Alec's voice, no doubt, yelling at him. Why? What had happened?
Wake up, damn it!
Mark opened his eyes, blinked against the bright sun breaking through branches high above him. Then Alec's face appeared, cutting the light off, and he could see more clearly.
It's about time,
the old bear said through an exaggerated sigh.
I was starting to panic, kid.
That was when Mark was hit with the bolt of pain in his head. It had just been slower to wake than he had. The pain raged inside his skull, felt as big as his brain. He groaned and put his hands on his forehead, touched the slickness of drying blood.
Ow,
was all he could say before he groaned again.
Yeah, you took quite the hit when we crashed. You're lucky to be alive. Lucky to have a guardian angel like me to save your hide.
Mark thought it might kill him, but he had to do it. Bracing for the agony, he sat up. He blinked back the spots in his vision and waited for the pain in his head and body to subside. Then he looked around. They were sitting in a clearing surrounded by trees. Gnarled roots wove their way through pine needles and fallen leaves. About 100 feet away, the wreckage of the berg lay cradled between two giant oaks, almost as if it had grown there like some sort of giant metal flower. Twisted and bent, it smoldered and smoked, though there was no sign of fire.
What happened?
Mark asked, still disoriented.
You don't remember?
Well, not since whatever it was smacked me in the head.
Alec threw his hands up in the air.
Not much to it. We crashed, and I dragged your butt out here. Then I sat here and watched you roll around like you were having a bad dream. Memories again?
All Mark could do was nod. He didn't want to think about it.
I rummaged around in the berg as much as I could,
Alec said, changing the subject. Mark appreciated him not digging any further.
But the smoke from the engines got to be too much. Once you can walk around without going eyeball up, I want to search some more. I'll find out who these people are and why they did what they did, if it's the last thing I do.
Okay, Mark answered. Then a thought hit him, followed by a surge of alarm.
What about that virus stuff we saw? What if the containers and darts were broken and it's all over the place now?
Alec held a hand out and patted Mark's chest.
I know. Don't worry. Had to go through that hatch room to get out and saw the boxes. Still sealed and safe.
Well, how does a virus work? I mean, is there a chance we caught it? Would we be able to tell?
He didn't like the uncertainty.
What kind of virus do you think it is, anyway?
Alec let out a small chuckle.
Son, those are a lot of good questions that I don't have answers to. We'll just have to ask our expert when we get back. Maybe Lana's heard of that strain before, but my guess is, unless you get a bad case of the sniffles, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Remember, it knocked the others out immediately, and you're still standing.
The words from the box flashed through Mark's head, and he tried to relax. Highly contagious.
I'll keep that in mind, he said warily.
How far from the settlement do you think we flew?
No idea. Might be a pretty piece getting back, but not too bad.
Mark lay down on the ground and closed his eyes,
put his arm over them.
Just give me a few minutes, then I think we should search the ship. Who knows what we might find?
You got it.
Half an hour later, Mark was back inside the Berg, kicking through debris, only now he was walking on a wall instead of the grated floor. The Berg being on its side was disorienting. It played tricks on his mind and upset his already queasy stomach and throbbing head. But he was as determined as Alec to find something to tell them who the Berg belonged to. They were obviously no longer safe in their little mountain abode. The biggest score would have been the computer systems, but Alec had tried that route to no avail. They were shut down, dead. Though odds were that he and Alec would find a portable phone or work pad somewhere in the wreckage, and if they got lucky, it wouldn't be broken. It had been an age since Mark had seen technology like that. After the flares struck, they'd been left with only whatever they had that hadn't fried, and batteries only lasted so long. But if you had a Berg, chances were you probably had batteries too. A Berg. He was inside a Berg. It was all really starting to hit him how much his world had changed in just over a year. At one time, seeing a Berg had been as exciting as seeing a tree, and just yesterday he would have guessed he'd never see one again. Now here he was rummaging through one that he'd helped wreck, looking for secrets. It was exciting, even though all he'd seen so far was garbage, clothes, broken ship parts, and more garbage. And then he struck gold. A fully functioning work pad. It was on. The bright display was what caught Mark's eye. It was lodged between a mattress and the bottom of a bunk in one of the small cabins. He turned it off as soon as he pulled it out. If the battery drained on the sucker, there'd be no way to recharge it. He found Alec in a different cabin, leaning over a personal trunk, cursing as he tried to break into it.
"Hey, looky what I got," Mark announced proudly, holding up the work pad for the man to see. "What about you?"
Alec had straightened, his eyes lighting up at the discovery.
"I didn't find a damn thing, and I'm just about fed up trying. Let's go have a look-see at that."
"I'm worried about the battery running out," Mark said.
"Yeah, well, all the more reason to study it now, don't you think?"
"Let's do it outside, then. I'm sick of this hunk of junk."
Mark and Alec huddled over the work pad together, sitting under the shade of a tree as the sun continued to trudge its way across the sky. Mark swore that time slowed down when that thing was up there, beating down on them with its abnormally powerful rays. He had to keep wiping the sweat off his hands as he controlled the screen functions of the work pad. Work pad? It seemed anything but. Games, books, old news programs that predated the sun flares. There was a personal journal that could provide a ton of interesting information if it had been updated recently. But there wasn't much work-related stuff on the device. Until they finally found the mapping feature. It obviously wasn't functioning from the old GPS satellites. They'd all been destroyed in the radiation holocaust of the sun flares. But it seemed to have a link to a tracer on the Berg, maybe controlled by old-school radar or other shortwave technology. And there was a log of every trip the now-ruined ship had taken.
"Look at that," Alec said, pointing to a spot on the map.
Every line tracking the Berg's flights returned to it eventually.
"That's obviously their headquarters, or base, or whatever you want to call it. And judging by the coordinates and what I know about this ridge of hills we call home, it can't be more than 50 or 60 miles away."
"Maybe it's an old military base," Mark offered.
Alec thought about it.
"A bunker, maybe. Having something like that would make sense up in the mountains. And we're going there, boy. Sooner rather than later."
"Right now?"
Mark knew his brain was still jumbled up from being hit during the crash, but surely the old man didn't want to hike all that way before going back to the settlement.
"No, not right now. We need to get home and sort out what happened there. See if Darnell's okay. And the others."
Mark's heart sank at the mention of Darnell.
"You know what we saw on that Berg? The boxes of darts? There's no way those people went to all that trouble to do a flyby flu ambush."
You're right. I hate it, but you're right, kid. I don't expect much good news upon our grand return. But we need to get our butts there all the same. So come on.
Alex stood up, and Mark followed suit, slipping the work pad into the back of his pants. He'd rather return to the village than search for a bunker any day. They set off, Mark's head still woozy and achy. But the farther they went, and the more his pulse quickened, the better he felt. Trees and sun and bushes and roots, squirrels and bugs and snakes. The air was warm but fresh, smelling like sap and burnt toast, filling his lungs. The berg had taken them a lot farther from home than they'd thought, and they ended up camping in the woods for 2 nights, resting just long enough to feel strong again. Small game hunted by Alec and his knife provided their only food. They finally got close to the settlement in the late afternoon of the 3rd day after the berg attack. Mark and the old soldier were about 1 mile away from the village when the stench of death hit them like a fresh wave of unbearable heat. Chapter 10. The sun was just a few hours from setting when they arrived at the base of the hill below the outlying shacks and huts. Mark had ripped a wide strip of cloth from the bottom of his shirt to wrap around his nose and mouth. He pressed his hand against it as they came up the last rise before the village. The smell was awful. He could taste it on his tongue, dank, rotten, moldy, all the way to his stomach, as if he'd swallowed something that had begun to decompose. Fighting the urge to throw up, he took one step after another, breathlessly waiting to see what horrors lay in the aftermath of the attack. Darnell. Mark had no expectations there, had accepted, with a heavy heart, that his friend might be dead. But what about Trina, Lana, Misty, and the toad? Were they alive? Or sick from some crazy virus? He stopped when Alec reached a hand out and touched Mark's chest.
Okay, listen to me, the old man said, his voice muffled behind his own swath of fabric. We need to set some things straight before we get up there. We can't let our emotions rule everything. No matter what we see, our number one priority has to be saving as many people as possible.
Mark nodded, then moved to resume walking, but Alex stopped him.
Mark! I need to know we're on the same page here.
Alex spoke with a stern scowl, a look that reminded Mark of an upset schoolteacher.
If we go up there and start hugging people and crying and attempting things that make no sense with people who have no chance, all because we're distraught, it'll just hurt more folks in the long run, you understand? We need to think long term. And as selfish as it sounds, we need to protect ourselves first, you get me? Ourselves. Saving the most people means we can't help anybody if we're dead.
Mark looked him in the eyes and saw something rock hard in them. He knew Alec was right. With the work pad, the map, and the things they knew about the people on the berg, it was clear there was something bigger going on.
Mark, Alec said, snapping his fingers to get the boy's attention. Talk to me, buddy.
So, what are you saying? Mark asked him. If people look sick, if those darts really made people sick, stay away from them?
Alec took a step back, his face pinched with an expression Mark didn't quite get.
When you say it like that, it doesn't sound so brotherly, but you're dead on. We can't risk getting sick, Mark. We don't know what we're going to find up there, what we're dealing with. I'm just saying that we need to be prepared. And if there's any doubt about someone, leave them behind to be eaten by animals, Mark said with a coldness that he hoped would hurt Alec.
The former soldier just shook his head.
We don't even know what to expect, boy. Let's just get up there and see what we see. Find our friends. But don't be stupid, that's all I'm saying. Don't get close to anyone. Certainly don't touch anyone. Keep that cloth wrapped around your pretty little head, do you understand?
Mark did. At the very least, it made sense to keep a distance from the people shot with darts. Highly contagious.
The words went through his head again, and he knew Alec was right. I understand. I won't be stupid, I promise. I'll follow your lead. A look of compassion came across Alec's face, something Mark hadn't seen often. There was true kindness in those eyes of his.
We've been through hell and back, kid. I know it. But it's toughened us up, right? We can do what it takes to live through one more challenge.
He glanced up the path toward the village.
Let's hope our friends are okay.
Let's hope, Mark repeated. He tightened the cloth mask around his face. Alec gave him a stiff nod, professional again, and started up the hill. Mark pulled himself together, swearing to put emotions aside for now, and followed. They'd just crested the hill when the source of the horrific smell came clearly into view. So many bodies. On the very outskirts of the village, there was a large, simple wooden structure, originally meant to provide cover in a rainstorm, then, when more solid buildings were built, to store things temporarily. It had three walls and an open front. A thatched roof had been layered with mud to keep the inside as dry as possible. Everyone called it the Leaner because, despite being pretty sturdy, it looked like it was tilting down the slope of the mountain. Someone had made the decision to put the dead in the Leaner. Mark was horrified. He shouldn't have been. He'd seen more dead people in the last year than 100 morticians of the past would have seen in a lifetime. But it was shocking all the same. There were at least 20 bodies laid out side by side, filling the entire floor. Most of them had blood covering their faces, around the nose, mouth, eyes, and ears. And judging from the color of their skin and the smell, all of them had been dead for a day or two. A quick scan revealed that Darnell wasn't in the group. But Mark didn't dare allow himself to hope. He pressed the cloth tighter to his nose and mouth and forced himself to look away from the carnage. There'd be no way he could eat any time in the near future. It didn't seem to faze Alec quite as much. He was still staring at the bodies with a look more of frustration than disgust. Maybe he wanted to get in there, examine the bodies, and try to figure out what was going on, but knew how foolish it would be.
Let's get into town, Mark said. Find our friends.
Okay,
was Alec's response. The place was a ghost town, all dust and dry wood and hot air. Not one person could be seen on the paths or in the alleys, but Mark kept catching glimpses of eyes peering out through windows and slats and cracks in the haphazard structures. He didn't know everyone in their camp, not by a long shot, but he was sure someone had to have recognized him by now.
Hey!
Alec shouted, startling him.
It's Alec! Somebody come out here and tell us what's happened since we left.
A voice responded, slightly muffled, coming from somewhere up ahead.
Everyone's been inside since the morning after that bird came. The ones who helped the people who got shot, most of them got sick and died too. Just took a little longer.
It was the darts,
Alec yelled in reply, making sure everyone within earshot could hear him.
It might be a virus. We got up in that berg, crashed it about 2 days from here. We found a box of the darts they shot at us. They could very well have infected the people who got hit with something.
There were people murmuring now and whispers coming from inside the shelters, but no one answered Alec. He turned to Mark.
Let's be glad they were smart enough to hole up in their homes. If there is some kind of virus, maybe that kept the thing from spreading like wildfire. Who knows? If everyone's been inside and no one else is sick, it could have died out with those poor saps in the Leaner.
Mark gave him a doubtful look.
I sure hope you're right.
Footsteps cut Alec off before he could respond. They both turned to face the center of the village just in time to see Trina run around a corner toward them. She was dirty and sweaty, her expression frantic, but her eyes lit up at the sight of Mark, and he knew that his did too. She looked healthy, which filled him with relief.
She was sprinting toward him and showing no intention of slowing down until Alec stopped her. He stepped between her and Mark, holding both hands out. Trina skidded to a stop.
"Okay, kids," Alec said. "Let's be careful before we go around hugging each other. Can't be too cautious."
Mark expected Trina to argue a little, but she nodded, sucking in deep breaths.
"Okay, I'm just so glad to see you guys here. But hurry, I need to show you something. Come on."
She waved her arms at them, then turned and ran back the way she'd come. Mark and Alec followed without hesitation, sprinting through the main alley of the town. Mark heard gasps and whispers and saw fingers pointing out of the closed quarters they passed. After several minutes, Trina finally stopped in front of a small shack that had been boarded up with three wooden slats nailed across the door. From the outside, someone had been imprisoned. And that someone was screaming. Chapter 11. The screams barely sounded human. Trina jumped back a couple of steps when she reached the boarded-up shack, then turned to face Mark and Alec. Tears were leaking from her eyes, and as she stood there taking deep breaths, Mark thought he'd never seen someone look so incredibly sad. Even after all the end-of-the-world crap they'd been through.
"I know, it's terrible," she said over the screams of the prisoner.
Mark could tell it was a man or boy, but had no idea whether it was someone he knew. The sounds were terrifying.
"But he made us do it. Said he'd slit his wrists if we didn't. And it's just gotten worse and worse since. We don't know why he didn't just die like the others. But Lana made sure from the get-go that we were careful. She was worried that there was a chance something contagious was loose. As soon as more people started getting sick, she quarantined him. It happened fast."
Mark was stunned. He opened his mouth to ask a question, but shut it. He thought he knew the answer. Alec said it for him.
"It's Darnell in there, isn't it?"
Trina nodded, and a fresh wave of tears poured down her face. Mark wanted nothing else but to hug her, hold her for the rest of the day and night. But all he had were his words now.
"It's okay, Trina. It's okay. You both did the right thing. Like Lana said, Darnell knew they might have infected him with something. We all need to be careful until we know whatever this thing is has stopped spreading."
Fresh screams erupted from the hut, seeping through the cracks. It sounded like Darnell was tearing his throat apart, and Mark wanted nothing more than to cover his ears.
"My head!"
Mark turned sharply, eyeing the hut. It was the first time Darnell had used actual words. Mark couldn't help himself. He hurried over to a boarded-up window with a gap about 2 inches wide running across the middle.
"Mark!"
Alec yelled.
"Get back here!"
"It's fine," Mark replied. "I'm not going to touch anything."
"I won't be a bit happy if you catch some nasty disease, not a bit!"
Mark tried to give him a reassuring look.
"I just want to see my friend."
He pressed the cloth tightly against his nose and raised his eyebrows dramatically at Alec. The man grunted and looked away. But Trina was staring him down, obviously torn between stopping Mark and joining him.
"Just stay there,"
he called to her before she could make a move. His voice was muffled through the mask, but she heard him clearly enough. She gave a slight nod, then her gaze fell to the ground. Mark faced the gap between the two boards of the window. The screaming had stopped inside, but he could hear Darnell whimpering softly now, moaning those same two words every few seconds.
"My head, my head, my head."
Mark took another step forward, then another. The slit was just a few inches from his face now. He cinched the strip of cloth behind his neck, making sure his mouth and nose were entirely covered. Then he leaned forward and peeked in. Broken beams of the fading sunlight arrowed across the dirt floor, but it was mostly dark. He saw Darnell's feet and legs in one spot of light, tucked up tightly to his body, but his face was hidden. He had his head buried in his arms by the looks of it. Still, the whimpering and the muttering. And he was shivering from top to bottom, as if he were caught outside in a blizzard. "Darnell?" Mark asked.
"Hey, it's Mark.
I know you've been put through the ringer, man. I'm really sorry. Hey, we got the suckers who did this to you. Crashed their berg and everything."
His friend didn't respond, just lay there, half in shadow, shaking and moaning, muttering those two words.
"My head, my head, my head."
Mark's insides plummeted to some dark place, and he felt hollow inside. He'd seen so much of terror and death, but looking at his friend, suffering alone, it killed Mark, especially because it was so pointless, needless. Why would someone do this to others after all the hell that had happened to the world? Weren't things bad enough? A sudden rage came over him. Mark punched the rough wood of the shack, bloodying his knuckles. He hoped somebody paid for all this one day.
"Darnell?"
Mark called again. He had to say something, make it better.
Maybe you're stronger than the others. That's why you haven't died. Just hang tough, man. Wait it out. You'll..."
Empty words. That was what it felt like. As if he were lying to his friend.
"Anyway, the sergeant and I, Trina, Lana, whoever, we're gonna make it right, somehow. You just..."
Darnell's body suddenly stiffened, his legs shooting straight out and his arms going rigid at his sides. Another scream, worse than before, erupted from his ravaged throat. It came out sounding like the roar of an enraged animal. Mark jumped back in surprise, but quickly leaned in again, his eye as close as possible to the opening without touching it. Darnell had rolled out into the middle of the floor, his face now in full view under a shaft of sunlight as he shook and shook. Blood covered his forehead, his cheeks, his chin, his neck, matted his hair. It was seeping from his eyes and ears, dripping off his lips. The boy finally got control of his arms and pressed them against the sides of his head, twisting this way and that as if he were trying to screw the thing right off his neck. And the screams kept coming, broken up by the only two words he seemed to know.
"My head! My head! My head!"
"Darnell," Mark whispered, knowing there was no way he could talk to his friend now. And despite how guilty and sick it made him feel, Mark also knew he couldn't possibly go in there to try and help. It would be beyond stupid.
"My head!"
Darnell shouted in one long, drawn-out wail of such ferocity that Mark stepped back again. He didn't know if he could bear to look anymore. There was the sound of movement inside, the shuffling of feet, then a loud thunk against the door, then another, and another. Thunk! 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 Mark closed his eyes. He knew what that horrible sound was. Trina was suddenly there, pulling him into her arms, squeezing him tightly as she shook with sobs. Alec protested, but only half-heartedly. It was too late now. There were a few more thunks, and then a last, long, piercing scream that ended in a wet, gurgly burst. After that, Mark heard Darnell slump to the floor with an exhale of breath. He was ashamed of himself, but all Mark felt in that quiet moment was relief that the ordeal had finally ended. And that it hadn't been Trina. Chapter 12. Mark had never thought of Alec as a gentle man, not even remotely. But when the soldier walked over and separated Mark from Trina, he did it with a warm look on his face. Then he spoke.
"I know we've been through a lot together."
Alec flicked his eyes over at the shack where Darnell was.
"But that might have been the worst yet, hearing what we just heard."
The man paused for a moment before he continued.
We can't give up now, though. From day one, we've been about living.
Mark nodded and looked at Trina. She wiped a tear away, giving Alec a cold look.
I'm kind of sick of surviving. At least Darnell is done with this world.
In all the years Mark had known her, she had never sounded so angry.
Don't talk like that, he said. I know for a fact you don't mean that.
Her gaze swept to him and softened.
When will it end? We survive months of the sun beating the tar out of the planet, find a place where we can build shelter, find food. A few days ago we were laughing. And then guys come in a berg and shoot us with darts and people die? What is this, some kind of joke? Is someone up there laughing at us, playing us like some kind of vert game?
Her voice cracked and she started crying again, covering her face with her hands as she sat down on the hard-packed earth, her legs crossed under her. Her shoulders shook with her silent sobs. Mark looked at Alec, whose eyes narrowed back at him as if to say,
She's your friend. Say something.
Trina?
Mark said quietly. He walked over and knelt behind her, then reached out and squeezed her shoulders.
I know. Just when we thought things couldn't get any worse. I'm sorry.
He knew better than to make things seem less terrible than they actually were. That was a pointless trick they'd all promised to stop a long time ago.
But I promise we'll stay together on all this, he continued. And we'll do everything we can not to catch whatever it was that killed Darnell and the others. But if we're going to do that...
He rubbed her back and looked up at Alec for help.
Then we need to be vigilant, the man said. We need to be cautious and smart and ruthless if it comes to that.
Mark knew it might be foolish to be touching Trina. But he didn't care. If Trina died, he seriously didn't know if he could keep going. Trina dropped her hands from her face and looked at Alec.
Mark, stand up and walk away from me.
Trina,
do it, now.
Go stand near Alec so I can see both of you. Mark did as she asked. He rejoined the man about 10 feet away and turned to see that any trace of the crying, helpless, I want to quit Trina was gone, replaced with the firmly resolved woman Mark was used to seeing. She got to her feet and folded her arms.
I've been really careful since you two got up on that berg. The suits those jerks were wearing, the darts, how quickly the people who were shot collapsed and got sick. Even before Lana told us anything, it was obvious something was going on. The only person I've interacted with was Darnell, but he knew to keep his distance. He was the one who barricaded himself in that place and forced me to board it up.
She paused to take a breath and eyed each of them.
My point is that I don't think I'm sick, especially since it acted so quickly on everyone who was.
I can see that, but...
Alec began, but Trina cut him off.
I'm not finished, she said with a sharp glare. I know we need to be careful. I could be sick. I know we've touched, but let's try not to anymore. Not until we're totally sure. And all three of us need to make new masks and to wash our hands and faces like crazy.
Mark liked that she was taking charge.
Sounds good to me.
Absolutely,
Alec agreed.
Now where are the others? Lana, Misty, the toad.
Trina pointed in a few directions.
Everyone is holed up somewhere, keeping their distance, just to be safe until no one shows any signs of sickness. Maybe another couple of days.
Sitting around for a day or two sounded like the worst idea possible to Mark.
I'll go nuts if we do that. We found a work pad with a map of where that berg came from. Let's gather supplies and get out of here. Maybe we can learn something.
Agreed,
Alec chimed in.
We should get as far as we can from this place.
Wait, what about Darnell?
Mark asked. Though he knew what they would say, it made him feel better to at least ask.
Should we bury him?
Trina's and Alec's eyes said it all. They couldn't risk being anywhere close to his body.
Take us to Lana and the others,
Alex said to Trina.
Then we go.
As they searched the town for their friends, Mark worried about people trying to join them. But fear had struck deep, and no one dared venture out of their home. The village was eerily quiet, but he could feel the eyes following him down the alleys and paths. It didn't surprise him, the more he thought about it. The world had punished everyone enough. Why should they risk bringing anything more upon themselves? They collected Misty and the Toad from the second floor of a log cabin on the outskirts of town, across the village from the leaner and its bodies. Trina wasn't sure where Lana would be. They found her about an hour after they set out, sleeping behind some bushes by the river. She was upset that they'd found her sleeping, but she'd worn herself out. As soon as Mark and Alec had boarded the burg and disappeared in the woods, she'd taken charge. Quarantining people and getting the bodies in one place. She said they'd been sure to wear gloves and masks, and helping deliver food from house to house. No one in the settlement knew exactly what had happened, but Lana had insisted from the start that care needed to be taken in case they were dealing with something contagious.
I'm not sick, she concluded as they readied to leave the stream and go back to the village. It happened so quickly, and the ones who got sick afterward have already died. I think I'd have symptoms by now.
How fast? Mark asked her. How fast did it take effect?
All but Darnell were dead within 12 hours, she replied. They woke up and showed symptoms within 2 or 3. I really think if anyone is still alive and symptom-free right now, they're clear.
Mark took in their group. The Toad fidgeting nervously, Misty looking at the ground, Alec and Lana staring at each other intently in what appeared to be a silent conversation, and Trina looking at Mark. Her eyes said it all. They were going to live through this, just like they'd lived through everything else. They were back at the shack an hour later, filling backpacks with as much food and supplies as they could carry. As they worked, they kept their distance from each other. Caution seemed to come naturally now. Mark washed his hands at least 3 times during the packing frenzy. They had just finished up, each of them with a loaded pack on his or her back, when Misty groaned. Mark turned to agree with her. The packs were heavy, but when he saw her face, his stomach sank. She was pale and leaning on a table with both hands. Mark was stunned. The last time he'd looked at her, she was fine. But then her legs gave out, and she collapsed to one knee. She touched the side of her face tentatively, almost as if she was worried about what she'd feel there.
My head hurts, she whispered.
Chapter 13.
Everyone get out of here, Lana yelled. Out, now!
Mark was speechless. Everything in him wanted to do the opposite of what she'd just ordered. He wanted to help his friend.
Get outside, then we can talk,
Lana insisted. She pointed to the door.
Go,
Misty said weakly.
Do what she says.
Mark and Trina exchanged a look, but she only hesitated a second before marching out the door. Alec was right on her heels, then Lana. Mark turned to leave, but then noticed that the Toad hadn't moved.
Hey, come on, man. Let's just go out there and talk about this. Misty, tell him.
He's right, Toady, she said.
She'd slipped her backpack to the floor and sat down next to it. Mark couldn't believe how quickly she'd gone from totally fine to literally on the ground, too weak to stand.
Go and let me figure this thing out. Maybe I just ate something weird.
But Mark could tell she didn't believe that.
We can't just keep abandoning people,
the Toad said, glaring at Mark.
Who cares what you do if it makes you end up dead?
Misty countered.
How would you feel if it was reversed? You'd want me to leave. Now go!
That seemed to drain a good chunk of her energy. She slumped and almost lay down.
Come on, Mark said. We're not abandoning her. We're just going outside to talk.
The Toad stomped out of the shack, muttering under his breath the whole way.
This is all so messed up. Totally messed up.
Mark looked at Misty, but she was staring at the floor, taking long, deep breaths.
Sorry,
was all he could get out. Then he joined the others. They decided to give her 1 hour. They'd see what happened. See if she got better or worse. Or if she stayed the same. It was a maddening hour. Mark was unable to sit still. He paced outside the shack, worried on so many levels. The thought that a virus might be slinking its way through his system, it was unbearable. And Trina's too. He wanted to know. Now. It was so overwhelming that he found himself forgetting that Misty could very well have it and die soon.
I think we need to readjust our outlook here, Lana said toward the end of their allotted time.
Misty hadn't improved or gotten worse. She still lay on the floor in the shack, breathing evenly, not moving at all, not speaking.
What do you mean?
Mark asked. He was grateful the silence had been broken.
Darnell and Misty proved that whatever this is doesn't necessarily take effect right away.
Alex spoke up.
I think we should use the time we have. We should hike to that place on the map. And we need to do it as soon as possible.
He lowered his voice and added, I'm sorry, but we have to get out of here, and what better place to go than where we can learn what's going on? Whatever was in those darts caused this. We need to go where the darts came from. Maybe there's something, some medicine, that can cure this sickness. Who knows?
It all came out sounding a little cold, harsh, but Mark couldn't disagree with him. He felt like he had to get away from here, if nothing else.
We can't leave Misty, Trina said.
But even her statement had no strength behind it.
We don't have a choice,
Alec countered. Lana stood from where she'd been sitting against a wall and brushed off her pants.
We don't have to bear the guilt of this, she murmured. Let's ask Misty. She deserves that. And we'll do whatever she decides.
Mark raised his eyebrows and looked around at the others, who were doing the same. Lana took that as agreement and walked to the open door of the shack. Without going in, she knocked on the frame and spoke in a loud voice.
Misty? How's it going in there?
Mark was perched on the ground where he could see inside. Misty was on her back, but slowly turned to look at them.
You guys need to go, she said weakly. Something is seriously wrong with my head. It feels like bugs are up there, eating away at my brain.
She took several deep breaths, as if saying just that much had sapped her strength.
But, honey, how can we leave you here? Lana asked. Don't make me talk anymore. Just go.
Another deep breath. Mark could see the pain in her eyes. Lana turned toward the others.
Misty says we need to go.
Mark knew they'd become hardened. They'd had to survive the world since the sun flares struck. But this was the first time they were faced with leaving someone who still seemed so alive. Misty's decision or not, he thought the guilt would eat away at him. When he looked at Trina, his resolve hardened. Still, he let Alec be the bad guy. The former soldier had gotten to his feet and slung his backpack onto his shoulders.
The best way to honor Misty right now is to get moving and learn something that could end up helping.
Mark nodded and followed suit, cinching tight the straps of his pack. Trina hesitated, then stepped up to the doorway, faced Misty.
Misty,
she began, but no more words came.
Go!
The girl shouted, almost making Trina stumble backward.
Go, before the things in my brain jump out and bite you! Go! Go!
She'd risen to rest on her elbows and screamed with such ferocity that Mark thought she might have hurt herself, might have realized that she was about to face the horror that Darnell had gone through.
Okay,
Trina said sadly.
Okay.
The toad was by far the closest friend to Misty, and he hadn't said a word. He just stood staring at the ground, tears in his eyes. But as Mark and the others prepared to leave, the stout man didn't move. Alec finally asked him what he was doing.
I'm not going, the toad said.
As soon as he said it, Mark realized he'd been expecting it. No surprise at all. He also knew that there'd be no changing the guy's mind. They'd be saying goodbye to two of their friends now. Alec argued with him, as did Lana. Trina didn't bother, obviously having come to the same conclusion as Mark. And just as Mark had predicted, the toad didn't budge.
She's my best friend. I'm not leaving her.
But she wants you to,
Lana said.
She doesn't want you to stay here and potentially die with her. She wants you to live.
I'm not leaving her,
he repeated, and gave Lana a cold stare. Misty said nothing from inside, either not hearing or too weak to respond.
Fine,
Lana said, not bothering to hide her annoyance. Catch up with us if you change your mind. Mark just wanted to leave. The situation had become unbearable. He took one last look at Misty through the doorway before moving on. She was curled up into a ball, speaking in an odd voice, though it was too low to make out what she was saying. But as they walked away, he was pretty sure that the girl had been singing. She'd snapped, he thought. She definitely snapped. Chapter 14. They only made it about 3 miles before it got too dark to continue, and Mark was more than ready to stop, exhausted from the crazy day. Alec had to have known they couldn't go far, but staying in that village was not an option. They were finally gone from it all, in the thick trees and fresh air of the woods, which helped drain some of the tension and emotional ups and downs of those last couple of hours. No one said much as they made a simple camp and ate a dinner of packaged food brought up from the Asheville factories. Lana insisted they keep their distance from each other, so Mark lay on his side several feet from Trina, the two of them staring at each other, wishing they could cuddle at least. Mark almost scooted over to her about 100 times, but stopped himself. He knew she wouldn't let him anyway. They didn't say much, just held each other's gaze. And Mark was sure she was thinking the same things he was. How their world had fallen apart once again. How they'd just lost 3 friends who'd survived the trek of horror they'd made, from the devastation that was New York City to the Appalachian Mountains. And of course she was wondering about the virus. Not a whole lot of happy thoughts. Alec ignored everyone, studying the work pad they'd retrieved from the burg. He'd made a rough copy of the map they'd found on it with a pencil and some paper, but he wanted to see if he could unearth anything else useful. He had his compass out, was making notes, and Lana was next to him, offering pointers. Mark realized his eyelids were drooping. Trina smiled at him. He smiled back. Pathetic or not, at least they were smiles. He fell asleep. And then the memories came rushing in once again, never letting him forget. Someone is on their tail. It's only been a couple of hours since it happened in the city above them. Mark has no idea what it was, but he assumes it was a bomb set by terrorists or an explosion from a gas leak, something that burned. The heat is unbearable, as are the screams. He and Trina have fled through the subtrans tunnels, finding abandoned offshoots, going deeper and deeper. But people are everywhere, most of them crazy with terror. Bad things are happening all around. Theft, harassment, worse. It's like the only people who escaped the catastrophe above them are hardened criminals. Trina found a box of Instafood left behind by someone in the chaos. Mark is carrying it now, both of them having already switched into some kind of instinctual survival mode. But others obviously have too, and every person they look at as they run seems to know that Mark and Trina have something they want. And maybe not just the food. No matter how many twists and turns they take in the underground labyrinth of filthy, sweltering hot passages, they can't lose the man on their tail. He's big and fast, and has become like a shadow. Yet every time Mark looks back at him, he seems to disappear into some nook or cranny. They're running down a long hallway filled with water to their ankles, splashing with every step they take. Mark's cell phone is providing the only light, and he dreads the moment it runs out of power. The thought of being in this place, alone and clueless as to where they should go, in complete darkness, terrifies him. Trina suddenly stops and grabs Mark's arm, pulls him through an opening to the right that he didn't see. They're in a small room. Looks to be an old storage closet from when this part of the system was still being used back in the old subway days.
"Turn it off,"
she says in a fierce whisper as she pulls him deeper into the room and stands behind him. Mark shuts down his phone, pitching them into the darkness he was just worrying about. His first instinct is to panic and scream and wander blindly about. But it's a brief moment of insanity, and it passes. He calms his breathing and is thankful he can feel the touch of Trina's hand on his back.
"There's no way he was close enough to see us come in here,"
she whispers in his ear from behind.
"And he can't be quiet in that water. Let's wait him out."
Mark nods, then remembers she can't see him.
"Okay,"
he says quietly.
"But if he somehow finds his way in here, I'm done running. We're going to gang up and beat him down." "Okay, we'll fight."
Trina squeezes his arm and leans into him. Despite the absurdity of feeling such a thing at that moment, in those circumstances, he flushes from top to bottom, tingles and goosebumps all over. If only this girl knew how much he likes her. He feels a twinge of guilt that on some deep level, he's thankful for whatever tragedy has occurred, because it's forced them together. He hears a couple of splashes in the distance, then a few more, obviously footsteps in the water of the small tunnel outside their room. Then a steady beat of them, getting louder as their pursuer, he assumes it's their pursuer, gets closer. Mark presses against Trina and the wall behind her, wishing they could somehow disappear into the brick. A light flicks on to Mark's right, almost making him cry out in surprise. The approaching footsteps stop. Mark squints. His eyes have already grown used to the darkness, and tries to see the source of the light. It moves and shines about the room, then settles on Mark's eyes, blinding. He looks down. It has to be someone with a flashlight.
"Who are you?"
Trina asks. She's whispering, but her voice sounds like it came out of a bullhorn because Mark is so nervous. The flashlight moves again as someone crawls out of a hole in the wall and stands up. Mark can barely make out any details, but it looks to be a man. A filthy man, his hair a mess, and his clothes tattered. Another man appears behind him, and then another. They all look the same, dirty and desperate and dangerous. Three of them.
"I think we'll be asking the questions," the first stranger says. "We were here way before you, and we don't like visitors none too much. Why are people running around here like cats anyway? What happened? You two don't look like the type that comes a-calling for the likes of us."
Mark is scared to the core. Nothing even remotely like this has ever happened to him. He fumbles for words, feeling like he needs to answer, but Trina beats him to it.
"Look, use your head. We wouldn't be down here unless something horrible happened up there, in the city."
Mark finds his voice.
"Haven't you noticed how hot it is? We think it was a bomb, a gas explosion, something."
The man shrugs.
"You think we care?"
All I care about is my next meal. And maybe something nice dropped in our laps today. A little surprise for me and the boys.
He eyes Trina up and down.
You won't touch her,
Mark says, the look in the man's eyes filling him with the bravery he couldn't find a few minutes earlier.
We have some food. You can take that if you'll just leave us alone.
We're not giving him our food, Trina snaps. Mark turns to face her and whispers,
Better than getting our throats slit.
He hears a clicking sound, then another. When he faces the men again, he sees the light glinting off silver blades.
Something you should learn about us, one of the men says. We don't do much negotiating around this neighborhood. We'll take the food and whatever else we want.
They start moving forward, and then a figure suddenly flashes in from the left, coming through the doorway from the passage outside. Mark barely takes a breath as he watches a short but violent burst of chaos happen right before his eyes. Bodies spinning and arms flailing and knives being tossed aside and punches and grunts. It's like some kind of superhero has entered the room, using speed and strength to beat the hell out of the three intruders. In less than a minute, they're all lying on the floor, curled up, groaning, and cursing. The flashlight has been tossed to the floor, shining on the boots of a very large man, the one who's been following them.
You can thank me later,
he says in a deep, grinding voice.
My name is Alec, and I think we have a much bigger problem than these losers.